Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, Global Supply Chain Practice Head for Morgan Phillips Executive Search. Today I'm happy to have with us Dhruvil Sanghvi, CEO of LogiNext, a leader in the logistics and field service optimization software. LogiNext is actually one of the fastest growing as software as a service company in the field of workforce and logistics optimization. In under 4 years, they managed to expand their global market with a presence in 10 countries, and they offer a range of workforce optimization, real-time tracking, route optimization, resource allocation automation, long-haul tracking, and on-demand management, boasting more than 250 enterprise clients, which include FMCG players like Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Coca-Cola, logistics companies like Agility or Usen, e-commerce players like Grab or Paytm, chemicals and manufacturing companies like BASF, Tata, Lanxess, and Dow Chemicals. One of their key investors is Paytm, which is India's largest mobile commerce platform, which is also backed by the likes of Alibaba and Warren Buffett. LogiNext has been awarded by Financial Times as one of the top 30th fastest growing tech companies in 2018. It's basically also on the list of Inc. Incorporated 5,000 fastest growing companies in US, and they're one of the top fastest growing logistics companies, as well as they've been awarded as the best logistics tech player by Frost & Sullivan. A short intro about Dhruvil. So he's obviously the CEO. He's actually the youngest tech business head in Forbes India 30 under 30 in 2017, which is a great achievement. He started his journey post Carnegie Mellon University, working as a consultant to a few Fortune 500 companies in positions within Ernst & Young and Deloitte. And after which in 2014, he founded LogiNext. To this day, he still extends his expertise as a consultant to many incubated startups, as well as being an early stage investor, on top of working long hours and long Sundays to build LogiNext forward. Dhruvil, welcome, and it is a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Radu. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the wonderful introduction.
Super. So let's start, because as I was sharing, we do have a broad and diverse audience all over the world. So maybe let's start very simply and in very plain terms. How would you describe LogiNext? What exactly is LogiNext to you?
So all in all, LogiNext is all about optimizing movements, right? So if you look around yourself, there's a laptop in front of you, there's a microphone, there's water, there's glass, there's table, chair, your clothes, your electronics, and there's a bunch of items that we all use in our daily usage. And a bunch of services that we all consume, which comes to us rather than we going to purchase the services. Behind all these goods and services, there's a complex supply chain, and there's a complex movement of goods happening, and there's a complex movement of people happening. What we have seen traditionally is that majority of this movement of, you know, e-commerce shipments or trucks or people happens in a very offline way and not in a very tech-oriented way. So what we try to do as LogiNext is we try to optimize these movements with advanced algorithms, including route optimization, capacity optimization, mapping technologies to bring business benefits in terms of cost savings, better customer experience, visibility, and so on.
Mm. Super. And tell us a little bit, I know a little bit the story, but tell us maybe share with our audience, how did you start? How was LogiNext started? What's the story behind it?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting one, right? Because most founders and most companies that I've seen, it usually starts with a personal pain or gain that the founder would have gone through. And usually these are all results into a consumer tech or a consumer product companies. We being in B2B world, you know, where we are selling software to organizations and very large organizations, we did not really personally go through any pains, but we kind of saw these pain points we are trying to solve in our customers' mind. So just to take you back to 2009, Manisha and myself, we went to Carnegie Mellon, which is the largest machine learning and data science institute in the world. And we did our master's in information systems, data analytics, and so on. And after that, I joined Deloitte and she joined IBM. And both of us were focusing on retail and transportation companies to help them with their needs of data analytics, machine learning, and so on. And I remember back in 2011, this used to be a buzzword because there were very few companies who had actually exploited benefits of these technologies. And I remember we had customers like, you know, which were very large transportation companies with thousands of trucks moving on the field, large e-commerce companies and retail companies where they had customers spread across the globe. And they always used to struggle on what they can do better in terms of serving the customer faster, right? And in those times, the whole e-commerce movement was coming where customers are looking for shipments to come to them and goods to come to them faster and faster, right? I mean, if you remember 5 years ago, nobody was expecting shipments to come in 2 days or 3 days. Now the customer expectation has changed where everybody wants things on their fingertips and goods at their doorstep within a few hours after the order placement.
Yes.
So all that you know, changes happened in that range from 2011 to 2014. And we used to, as consultants, we used to always help large enterprises reinvent the wheel, right? By advising them and then building a software from the scratch. And they used to make the same mistakes. Every customer used to make the same mistakes while building a tech and using a tech. In 2014, we thought, you know, hey, why don't we, you know, kind of package this whole location intelligence and faster fulfillment kind of technology into more of a cloud-based manner, which is easier to use, cheaper to try out, and it's also a very big, large problem to solve for corporations across the world. And with that thought, we started LogiNext towards the end of 2014. And in last 4 years, we have been able to grow at a pretty interesting speed.
Mm. Very interesting. Very interesting. And I mean, it's fascinating. And there's a certain pattern. I mean, I think I've come across a few people that have had the benefit and the privilege in some ways to be consultants, even if the life as a consultant is very tough and it involves long hours. But you get to experience and to see a lot of companies struggling with common problems, and then some of the more entrepreneurial ones like yourselves, you know, come up with a solution. So it's interesting how you kind of capitalized on that and you know, grew to where you are today by offering them a kind of a solution to a common problem. But if we had to look a little bit and deep dive a little bit, because visibility, right, and exact location of shipments, if we take that, is probably one of the biggest supply chain challenges today, right? And it was in the last couple of years as well. And then you kind of made the affirmation as well, or the statement that LogiNext could become the Google of its space because software helps manage and organize information about anything and everything that moves. Kind of, can you tell us a little bit more, how would you tie these two together and how would you see LogiNext as the Google of this space?
Right, and that's a very interesting question, right? So let me tell you a story behind this. If you remember, you know, a few years before, when there was no e-commerce, everybody had this question in terms of logistics and transportation industry, especially folks who are from that industry will be able to relate to this very well. But there's a very common question being asked, where is my shipment, right? And honestly, that problem has been there, which was being solved by making tons of calls and follow-ups every single day. Like, let's say if you are a B2C delivery company, let's say a food delivery company or a grocery delivery company or an e-commerce company, they spend millions of dollars just to manage call centers, which can address one simple question that customers ask, where is my shipment? And the same question is still persisting in majority of the part of the world, where even businesses themselves don't know where their shipments are. So I think the whole visibility piece in terms of, you know, getting real-time location of where the things are still remains pretty much unsolved problem. That too, when as of now we have, you know, smartphones in everybody's hands, we have Google Maps everybody's using, right? And we have you know, cabs like Uber and Grab and Didi and, you know, Olas of the world who are everywhere. And now you're able to track these cabs coming towards you in real time. You are able to track food coming towards you in real time. But that's not somehow happening in the world of e-commerce and especially B2B logistics. So I think that's something we kind of try to solve with a very fundamental problem of visibility. And we try to kind of bring you know, multiple GPS feed, multiple smartphone feeds and location feeds into one single platform to really give a real-time location tracking experience. And more than that, what we observed over time is that just location tracking is also not sufficient for businesses, right? I mean, if you have, let's say, 1,000 trucks or a fleet of 500 salespeople, or if you are in a plumbing business where you have plumbers going all over, or in a home services or professional services business, all these people are moving, but you cannot keep on tracking every person, or you cannot keep on tracking every truck, right? You have to make it more actionable. So what we did over time is that we took this location information of the behavior of how people are moving and how trucks are moving and how shipments are moving into something called as behavior-based routing. And this behavior-based routing kind of considers how a person has moved, and how he should be moving tomorrow and how he should be moving next week and next month. So based on this information, we kind of, you know, collate the tracking information. We consider the traffic conditions in the city. We consider the capacity of the vehicle, the size and, you know, value and volume of the shipment, time preference of the customer, and other 15 parameters to come to a point where we effectively manage the schedule of every driver, every person on the field, that too based on their behavior, so that nobody really feels that a machine is driving them, but they feel it more, it's more personalized routing experience they are getting. And that kind of became our comparative differentiation over time, where our sort of routing and optimization is not a very machine specific optimization, it's very human optimization, where people can relate to it. The best example I can is Google Maps, right? If you are taking the same route every day from your home to office, and if you're using Google Maps every day, Google will start suggesting you multiple stops or multiple other activities on the way while you are from home to office. Or another example is Uber Pool, where if you have, you know, two people trying to go together in the same direction, Uber will automatically pull them up and allow them to share a cab, which can bring cost benefit to the customers and to the company and the driver as well. So we are trying to, you know, create a similar experience of resource pooling, optimization, tracking all together into a very offline industry like transportation, logistics, or e-commerce.
So very interesting. So if I can go a little bit deeper there, and then let's maybe try to get some examples, because you work across different types of industries, right? So you work with courier companies, you work with e-commerce companies, you work with chemical companies. So maybe let's take some examples. How did you do it? And maybe give some examples to our audience in terms of how did you use these algorithms that you have and this type of optimizations to help and enable companies to maybe save cost or optimize their capacity load or, you know, whatever it may be.
Right. So right now, the fresh example I have on top of my mind is that we are working with the largest CPG company out of the United States.
CPG?
Yeah, that's a consumer goods companies, or as in Asia, we call it FMCG, which is fast moving consumer goods.
Yep.
And then this company produces, chocolates and biscuits and a lot of different consumer products. Some of them are edible, some of them are not edible. And they have more than, 10,000 different SKUs in their portfolio. And they have more than 50 manufacturing plants in the US. They have more than 300 warehouses. And they have another 5,000 distributors and total 15,000 trucks, which are moving across all this network to fulfill their customers' demand every day, right? And they also are doing e-commerce, where you can actually get some of these items delivered at your doorstep from the nearest store. So what our software does, it takes the customer's demand on what every customer is really looking for every day. And then it places the order at the plant level. And the plant manufactures that, pushes that inventory to the warehouse. The warehouse knows which all distributors or which are sub-warehouses I have to fulfill this load to and how many trucks will I need. So the software calculates that. Let's say, in a station or a hub or a warehouse located in New York, they typically need 15 trucks, versus in a Chicago kind of area, they need 7 trucks, versus in Nevada state, they need, 5 trucks in every station. So all that network planning happens on our software. And then every single stakeholder in the entire supply chain gets to know what they have to do today and when they have to fulfill the load, when they have to leave the warehouse, how they have to do the pick and pack, how they have to load the truck, when exactly the truck reaches the customer's location. And at the same time, customers get to see the whole journey in real time. Like imagine something like an Uber, but you get to see your shipments coming to you from the very first day. Like it's a 3-day journey for a shipment coming from the manufacturing plant all the way to your doorstep. And you get to see the whole journey in real time as a customer. At the same time, the company, the large company that I'm talking to, which is our customer, they get to see the benefits of how much money they are saving by optimally planning this whole supply chain and logistics back to back.
Got it. And how, I mean, do you have some, like, because I'm sure that, you know, you having worked with a lot of clients, what are some of the common challenges? I mean, I guess it's going to come down to the visibility piece and to the actually having that algorithms and that kind of machine learning type of a capability to deal with the planning side. But do you have some statistics? Like, do you typically save on average this much percentage, or do you have? I mean, I'm sure that also you need to kind of customize the solution depending on the client. But do you have some broad estimates in terms of what you've been able to achieve so far?
No, absolutely. And even on our dashboard, our software, this is not just something which creates routes. We also quantify the business benefit. Why? Because we know the cost of every truck. We know the cost of manufacturing. We know the cost of transportation, cost of people, their wages. Every single thing is plugged into our software. So at the end of the day, we kind of showcase to our customers how much money they are saving and how they are improving the customer experience, because we also have customer-facing apps where customers can give real-time feedback. Just like how when you take a Uber ride, you give 5-star rating to a driver. We have similar experience created for a B2B world or a B2C world as well, where end customer can rate how their delivery experience was. And all that gets collated as two key KPIs. One is the productivity improvement, and one is customer experience improvement. And we track that on a daily basis, and we report that to the C-level people at the organizational level. So far, we have seen about 5 to 10% improvement in terms of productivity, depending on the industry, geography, and the customer's scale. And we have seen as high as 25% improvement in the NPS score, which customers rate their the delivery experience. So and then we kind of portray that in our case studies, which we publish online. So you can go to YouTube, you can go online on Loginx website, and you can find all these numbers, all these case studies, customers talking about how they benefited, and also a lot of videos on how customers really use it. So we are trying to be as transparent as possible in what benefits we bring to these organizations.
Mm.
One of the biggest challenges, if I have to talk about while implementing, is the human friction that we face, right? I think change management is a big piece of this whole chain, because this is more of a digital transformation project that companies go through. This is very advanced technology for some of the companies. And sometimes we also face a lot of friction from the ground, where if they are not educated enough on what the benefit of the software is, they sometimes try not to use it, especially in very developing markets like India or Indonesia or Saudi Arabia, right? Where end users or drivers or dispatch managers, they are not necessarily the most tech-savvy people in the organization. And their inherent inefficiencies and a lot of workarounds that they might have plugged in on ground gets uncovered, and they sometimes feel a little bit more threatened by having too much visibility into their working patterns and too much automation. So of course, we are not as high tech as a driverless car, where somebody feels that their jobs are being lost. But at the same time, we do bring a lot of realistic automation, where people they get pushed to do better jobs and not the same mundane jobs, which sometimes do create some friction there.
Mm. And also for the driver, maybe, if before he could take a break for half an hour and nobody would notice, now if he's tracked, then he wouldn't be able to do that, right? So it's
this is something which is such a global concept, right? A global problem, I would say, because earlier we always used to think that, this is only a problem in developing countries. But even when we started having customers in Singapore, US, Europe, all these countries have the same problem. They have unions on the ground. They have drivers not wanting to be overly efficient. There's a lot of regulations by the government which are not being enforced. So not just on the driver's side, but sometimes even organizations exploit their drivers way too much by overloading trucks, by pushing them to work overtime, and asking them to take very longer working hours. All that gets exposed in a very transparent way, which sometimes even organizations don't want. So it's a very fancy fancy thing to know that even developed countries have the same problems from people's standpoint as a developing country would have.
Yes, And actually, I know that you also shared, and this was fascinating, and I want to ask you more. You shared that currently, let's take India, right, which is a very, very challenging and developing market, and you know, I think the logistics of it is you know, can be totally troublesome and headache. And you were saying that you basically have an accuracy of delay route and time prediction across the different legs and models of 95%. So I'd love to know, how do you manage to achieve this accuracy rate in a market like India, which is, you know, it's probably one of the most challenging ones, where you have, you know, roads being blocked or floods, or, you know, I mean, there's so much that can happen in traffic as well, right? So it's fantastic if you manage to get that 95%.
Yeah, no, and that's one of our key differentiators, right? As I mentioned earlier, traditionally every company has been trying to implement this purely by software and not by human behavior analysis. Now, when you actually notice, like, what Google is doing for Google Maps, they are not only trying to produce a great technology, they're actually taking a lot of human elements and data points, which comes from everybody's smartphones, to predict traffic. We do something very similar. So we don't only take a technological approach where we just, you know, a software decides how it should be. Our software also considers the telematics information, where there are a lot of, you know, lefts and right turns which drivers might be taking, which may not be intuitive for a software, but drivers somehow do it, right? For example, let's say in Singapore or in Indonesia, let's say somebody, one particular driver is very comfortable with, you know, North Jakarta. And he's very efficient at some of the neighborhoods because he knows the shortcuts and the detailed intricacies of some of the, of that localized neighborhood in North Jakarta. So what we do is, based on these patterns, we only allow and give that particular load to that driver, so that a North Jakarta driver doesn't have to go to South Jakarta, which will naturally improve his routing efficiency, and he will take better decisions on the ground because he's having to do the same thing again and again. Mm. So that's just one part of it, right? Second is, as you mentioned, right, there could be situations like heavy traffic, flooding, and so on. So what we have done, we have connected multiple map sources into our routing engine. So it's not we only depend on Google Maps or any other particular map data. We combine all this map information to find the most accurate routing. That naturally ends up in the, you know, helping us find out if there are any areas which are choked up. We also have weather data integration. That means if there are certain particular weather changes happening in particular neighborhoods, then we also get to digest that information or enter that information while doing our routing. We do work with a few partners where they provide something called as micro weather updates. So if you see, usually a weather update applies to the whole city, right? You know that Singapore, it's going to rain in Singapore today, or it's going to flood in Mumbai today. But it's not that the whole Mumbai is flooding, or that the whole Singapore is raining, right? Or it's raining equally. There are usually very smaller pockets where the rains might be too high and the traffic might be too high, and some pockets where rains might be less. So we work with a few partners in behind the scenes where we pick up these hexagonal pockets based on certain IoT sensors that our partners have deployed, and we accurately measure the weather for those pockets, and then we consider that into our routing. So all this, you know, with the whole ecosystem of multiple data points, and including human data points and their behaviors, makes our software the most accurate in terms of routing. I'm not sure, again, if this is too technical information, or, you know, if it's interesting for the audience to know, but I thought I'd just share that with
them. No, it's fascinating. I didn't know myself that you can actually kind of dissect based on geography and based on weather and based on pockets of, I mean, because you're right. I mean, typically it's not the same weather all across even the one city. There's differences. And I mean, Singapore is not that big, for example, but sometimes it rains in one part and it doesn't rain in the other part. So definitely that affects traffic. So no, thanks for mentioning that. And I wanna kind of come to the also the to also Paytm, which obviously is your investor, and they're one of also your biggest clients, right? So tell us a little bit about the, you know, kind of the highlights of this kind of dual relation that you have, right? Because they're backed by Alibaba, right? So it's actually a mobile wallet service provider, right? So Paytm, to make it simple for our listeners, I think Warren Buffett recently invested in them as well. So how did you end up in this relation with them, kind of investor and client, hybrid?
And very interesting question, Radu. Now, what we've been seeing over the last few years is that, and honestly, this has been a trend with us. Majority of the customers we work with, within 3 to 6 months, they usually feel like investing in us. It's a change. It's a new trend that we have observed ourselves. Even our team had no experience of such a trend. And when I talk to our other financial investors, they also sometimes feel surprised by the amount of interest we gather from our customers to be our investors. I think the reason behind that is why they want to invest is because lately technology has been the only game, like a big game-changing concept in every industry. And the customers we typically work with, they are more offline customers. And when they see a technology like this, they usually want to become a part of the success story in a much larger financial returns method as well. So when they see that, they are using this software, which is getting them 5% or 10% business benefit, but they also want to invest in our growth story because they may end up making much larger returns based on our own growth story. Looking at the revenue growth that they see, the customer growth they see, and the whole conviction they build by using our software. And that's when they usually get interested. There was a similar story we had with Paytm as well, where Paytm was one of our customers. They wanted to be one of our largest customers. They wanted us to get plugged into multiple other companies of Alibaba portfolio as well, including Lazada and Tokopedia, CP Group in Thailand, and a few other ones. And then we ended up working with all of these guys. So it was a very good synergy for us, where we ended up acquiring a lot of customers together in one go. And the second one was, Paytm also got a good investment appetite, where they wanted to invest in a fast-growing company. And they have other, almost another 10 investments like us, not exactly in the same space, but in different spaces, because Paytm itself is a very fast-growing company. The business synergy we have with them is not the payment wallet business. They have a big e-commerce business as well, where they have investors like SoftBank, Alibaba, and Warren Buffett. And they wanted us or our software to run the whole end-to-end transportation and logistics management module for their e-commerce business. And we are one of the core tech partners they have right now.
Wow, it's super. I mean, this is an excellent sign. I mean, if your clients want to invest in you guys, I mean, it's a quite a clear sign that you're doing a great job, and you're on the right track, right? So, and maybe I should get you in touch with some of our private equity and venture capital. But anyways, we'll talk about we work with some of these groups as well. So maybe we talk about I'll ask you what's your future plans. But super to hear.
Never seen, if you see some of the other companies who have been investing is, again, companies like DHL, FedEx, UPS, even, again, Alibaba is definitely one of the closest examples to us. And Salesforce, Microsoft, all these guys have been investing heavily in this space of logistics technology, field service technology. And all of them, they ultimately do some strategic and synergetic investment with their portfolio companies. And I think that's a new trend where a lot of corporates are now investing, starting from, telecom companies like the Vodafones of the world and Verizons of the world, to mobile manufacturing companies like Xiaomi, Samsung and Apple and all these guys. And then every single sector, even oil and gas, logistics and transportation, as I said, e-commerce has been a big, corporate investor in the market. So it's just been a very, hot topic. Corporates see a very deep strategic tie-up with these, companies like us, where they are running their, where software like us being a very core part of their operations. And they want to bet big on fast-moving businesses where they can get an exit and get good returns.
Yes, and tell me a little bit. I mean, I saw the news that you come now fully integrated with WhatsApp, right? So the delivery management platform, as part of Loginext, it comes with WhatsApp. It enables real time communication between drivers, dispatch managers, and consumers. How did you do that? I mean, is there what's the story behind that as well? Because WhatsApp obviously is a super useful and used.
Yeah, no, I think it's very natural to us, right? Because one of the key components about our software is customer communication. What that means is, let's say if you're ordering something from e-commerce and you receive an SMS in the morning, and you know, hey, Joe is out for delivery with your shipment, is going to come sometimes today. What we do is we actually give a tracking URL, an exact ETA on when this Mr. Joe is going to reach your home, so that you should be at home or your office to receive the shipment, which kind of saves a lot of time for driver and for the customer. Now, the whole real-time communication two-way was not as seamless with SMS kind of communication method. And nobody wants to go online and keep on checking the tracking link, right? Now people are more and more on mobile. WhatsApp and tools like WhatsApp or WeChat has just changed the whole paradigm in terms of how people communicate to each other and even with the bots online. So we kind of deployed a chat bot which is communicating this information in real time to consumers or the receivers of the shipment, and they can see the tracking. They can, you know, send replies like, you know, hey, I'm not at home at 2 p.m. Can he come at 6 p.m. instead? Or changing the customer's location itself, where the customer can reply, you know, hey, I'm not home. Can he come at my office right now because it's just half a mile away and I can see that the driver is just passing by that location who is carrying my package. So I think tons of new opportunities have opened up. People are much more familiar with WhatsApp. You know, I'm sure you must be spending almost 10 times more time on WhatsApp versus what you spend on with an SMS app on your phone.
Yes, so, yes, and of course it's free, right? So
It is more discussion. Like a chat experience versus an SMS. People don't prefer to do a chat. Like SMS is more one way. Although of course two way is possible, but it doesn't give a feel of a chat. Versus yes. WhatsApp, much more interactive. And in terms of the images you can share, in terms of maps, links, tracking links, and you know, two-way communication, and calling on VoIP, it's free. So all that, you know, having said that, we kind of thought, why don't we make WhatsApp a integral part of our communication platform, and we make customer communication even more seamless for our enterprise customers.
Yes. And I wanted to ask you because, you know, we talked about algorithms, we talked about, you know, obviously you studied machine learning actually at university as well. And I mean, I think machine learning, artificial intelligence are, you know, two kind of words that are getting thrown around everywhere these days. And very few people actually understand what they mean. But I just wanted to see if, you know, and you talk about, you know, obviously you talk about data-driven solutions, you talk about, you know, big data capabilities. How do you plan to leverage on this, right? On, let's say, machine learning, artificial intelligence, and you know, all these type of capabilities to push Loginex forward?
Right. No, I think if you notice that we were one of the first, you know, machine learning and AI backed software in this segment. So even if you look back in our, you know, if our press release is going all the way back to 2014, you will see a similar messaging with the same words there when nobody was using machine learning. So I think what we have noticed kind of over time, which I fully agree to you, is that, you know, these words are being abused more and more. And that's why now I'm being more conservative in using these words. But if I have to say, you know, where we use data integrally, I think it's again, you know, comes back to our customer experience and optimization engines, which are more driven by the previous trends. One of the, again, example is like, you know, if you're an e-commerce customer and if you typically tend to receive the shipment at a particular location, the third or fourth time you do that as a repeat customer, we automatically learn how much time it takes for you to receive the shipment in terms of loading, unloading, signing the package and so on. And how much time it's taking the driver to kind of unload the truck and then, you know, walk up to the stairs and deliver it to your home door or doorstep, which could be on 23rd floor. And there could be other logistical challenges or security clearances and whatnot. So I think all that can be learned at a customer level. And we have these things plugged in into our software where there's a lot of learning happens based on how a delivery is happening in terms of not just routes, but also the customer interaction at the customer's doorstep. It could be, again, a B2B customer or a B2C customer. And then we automatically, we reduce the number of data points we need over time while doing routing. Traditional routing software will require the same data points every time you want to route something. Our software starts to reduce the number of data points you need after a few months.
Yes, because it's learning. Yes, yes. Super.
So, yeah, so that's a kind of example I can give without using a lot of buzzwords.
Yes, thank you for that. And let's talk about future, right? Let's talk about plans for the future. I mean, you were saying that in the next 3 years, you intend to become the one-stop solution for all legs of logistics, you know, first line, first mile, line haul, or last mile. How do you plan to do that? And I'd love to hear also, how do you plan to expand next, right? I mean, are you going to raise some more funds? You know, are you going to grow organically? How do you plan to do that?
Yes, I think from the product side, our growth is going to be focused on bringing end-to-end visibility and end-to-end optimization. As of now, there is no software in the world which brings end-to-end optimization altogether. Like, you know, like you just put one shipment or one AWB number or one invoice, it automatically breaks into multiple legs, assigns to the right parties, makes sure the execution happens, gives the tracking information, and closes the whole loop. There's no such software. I would say we are 80% there. We still have 20% work to be done in that case. That's our product roadmap for next, you know, at least 12 months. And we want to be the first one to get there. From the fundraise size, we are very organically growing right now. And we are looking, so we kind of, you know, in the middle of one fundraise. You know, I can't share a lot of information right now, but hopefully we'll be able to declare something towards the end of this year. It's going to be a pretty large round of investment we are raising, looking at the size of our company. And then the focus is going to be more about, you know, how aggressively we can, you know, invest in our product roadmap and our sales roadmap. So that's what the focus is. But I think we are not a big promoter of raising a lot of capital. We are in a SaaS business. A SaaS company does not really require a lot of capital to grow. It is more about how fine-tuned you are in terms of your engine and how carefully you can raise the right amount of money to create the highest amount of returns on investment for our investors. So far, you know, with our angel investors, we have given them almost 15 times their return on capital in just less than 3 years. With our Series A investors, they're already, you know, running at 5 times higher their returns on their investment. So that's what we focus more on how we can generate more returns for our shareholders versus how much more money we would raise to keep on growing. And again, this is because we have a business model which is more cash flow centric business model and not a very external capital or funding centric business model.
Yes. And then look, it tends to be healthier. So I mean, great stuff. And you know, keep doing it to the best that you can do it, because it's healthier, and you know you don't run the risk of, you know, running out of cash that easily. So and it's better.
Businesses have that essence where they can do that. I think there are a lot of business models which does require continuous capital inflow to, you know, keep the engine live. In a B2B software business, you don't really, you know, your customers pay for your growth. And they happily pay for your growth without having any dilution in your equity.
Yes, I mean, at the end of the day, you're also helping them, and you're saving their costs. So it's kind of like a nice synchronicity. And if we had to kind of move to the element of the let's say the people element, the soft element of, you know, growing a startup, growing a company, it's always about the people, and it's always about the right people, right? So it's key to any startup startup's growth to hire the right people. So when you hire, what do you focus on when you look for new talent for LogiNext?
That's a great question, and I often get that question asked. I think the fundamental one-liner that I always give to all the people who interview with us or all our current team members who represent that philosophy is to bring more and more agility in what we do. I think speed and time is of essence for us. Fast growth is what we are looking at. And people who have that appetite to grow fast is something that we look at. So we don't really look at a lot of, you know, of course, skills are important. Passion is important. More than skills and passion, I think there's one layer above these two things also, which is your ability to scale and ability to grow fast. And I've seen a lot of companies, a lot of early startups, which I am investing in now, where they kind of plateau because of the comfort people get over time. For us, we constantly reiterate the importance of agility in our daily working. Our customers love it. So when we do our NPS surveys and customer satisfaction surveys, the biggest thing that we always get appraised of is our speed of execution, like our speed of building features, building technology, speed of deployment, even speed of product, speed of sales cycles. everything. So that's what defines us. That's what I typically like to hear from the people who want to join us, who apply at Loginext, who interview at Loginext. And that's what our team has done a great job at, where they have, you know, invested a lot of their time and efforts and hard work to, you know, continuously keep this engine running and keep that agile culture in the center of what we do.
Mm. And you, because I think now you're a couple of hundred people already, right? So you've grown quite tremendously. I mean, in these 4 years, and I was reading somewhere that you hired. I mean, by now you've hired hundreds of people, right? So in the journey, are there any key lessons that you can share? You know, in terms of how do you tell who's good from who's the best, and you know, try to hire the best, right? Any clear signs? So apart from, of course, you know, people that like speed, apart from certain, but are there any tips or any specific, you know, kind of lessons to tell good from best?
I mean, I think the good people are always talking more about, again, this is just my personal observation. I could be wrong there, but my observation is the good people are always looking at, they're talking more about the value creation, right? Versus what other environment is, or what other things are to support them to do that. I think the best people, they just directly get to value creation as fast as possible. And even when they join, you could see that change in the first 1 month or 2 months, where they would quickly get onboarded themselves. They would break things. They would start doing multiple things. They would have an achievement in their kitty in first couple of months, versus an average performer would take 3 to 6 months or more than that to get comfortable. They would expect a lot of onboarding. They would expect, teaching, learning, you know, very inclusive environment, support from peers, from management. And I'm not saying it's bad, but for me, that's what defines a good person with an amazing person, right? A rock star for me is somebody who just, you know, who is directly thinking about value creation. It could be product value, it could be customer value, investor value. And of course, it all impacts their own value as well, right? And that's what high performers are. High performers do care about their own value. How much value they're creating for themselves, how much learning and growth they are having in their own careers, in their own financial trajectory, and so on. So that's one differentiator I've seen. One of the lessons learned for us while interviewing and having and hiring people over the last 3 years is, not having a very consistent approach and having more customized approach based on people to people and based on teams to team. I think now we are trying to standardize that as much as we can, where we want to have a standard approach on how we hire across the board, rather than having, you know, one team hires in a different way and second team hires in a different way. I'm not sure how much it is relatable to other companies. I think this is the phase of growth we are into. And I think challenges keep on changing, where a 20 people company versus a 200 people company versus a 1,000 people company has different problems and different lessons learned. As of now, what we were trying to do is trying to bring more standardization, more agility in terms of hiring, and trying to make hiring more repeatable and consistent across.
Yes. And I think, I mean, you're in a normal accelerated growth mode, and it's normal, you know, when you're growing at the rate that you have been growing for the last couple of years, that, you know, kind of, you know, breaking things and figuring it out as you go is the only way to do it. And this standardization indeed comes with time, and we've seen it because we deal with creating, you know, succession planning and leadership development for different companies at different stages. Typically, a little bit more mature, but it takes time. It takes time, and it's a process. So, but it needs a conscious approach and a conscious attention from people like yourself, from the CEO and from the leadership team, because indeed you need that consistency. Because only once you create this culture that is duplicable and the people that you're onboarding are in line with that culture, you can kind of sustain this growth and this type of approach, balanced approach across the organization. So I think it's a great problem to have. It means that you're on the right track. And I also know that what was interesting about you guys that you have, in terms of the team, right? You have you were saying that you have almost a perfect 50-50 split between male and female ratio, which is incredible. And then you have your average age is about 27, right? So super young. I don't think that you've planned for this, right? But you know, how did this happen? Actually, you know, 50-50, it's incredible. I think probably one of the only tech startups like this.
Yeah, no, honestly speaking, I would be more honest here. I think it's a 2-year-old press release. So I would not say it is the same right now. Our average age is now 30. And although you would have loved for that to be 27, but the business we are in, it kind of requires more and more mature people as we scale. As of now, it's between 29 and 30. And we don't have a 50-50 split anymore. Unfortunately, we have a 30-70 split. So I'll be very honest there. We always used to take immense pride in you know, having a very balanced male versus female ratio. But you know the challenges, right? It's all, you know, the kind of world hold, you know, moves the company towards a direction where it just becomes a little more unbalanced. But
yes, but still, I mean, if you think about it, it's still fairly balanced. And in terms of the age, I mean, it's you know, I mean, okay, you're 30. I mean, it's okay, it's you're younger. You're definitely as an organization and as the type of culture, it's young. So it's fantastic in terms of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I wanted to ask you among the last questions, and we're coming to a close. Looking back, you know, in terms of some of the lessons that you've learned so far as an entrepreneur, what would you say were, you know, some of the best and some of the worst parts?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. I'm just thinking out loud. The best and the worst part of being a founder, is that the question again?
Yes.
I think the best part is the you know, is the satisfaction that you get, and then the impact that you're able to make in a short time, right? So let me reframe this, right? The best part is when you look back on what you have done so far. Then the worst part is when you look in front on what you have to achieve next.
Right? That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Right? When you look ahead, you feel, you know, that there's mountains to cross, there are oceans to swim. And there's just so much to do with so much less time and so less people and so much less resources. And it always kind of, you know, puts you into that self-doubt kind of a mode again and again. But when you look back, that's when your happiest moments are, right? When you realize how much you have achieved over such a short time, how much you have contributed to the economy, to your employees' lives, to their careers, to your own careers, how much recognized you are, right? And how much happy everybody is around you. So yeah, that's the difference between the best part and the worst part.
Yeah, and what makes you, I'm just curious, right? What makes you the proudest, right? You know, you've done a lot in these 4 years. What's some of the proudest moments at your journey at Loginex?
I think that the best moment was, you know, almost like 2.5 to 3 years ago, where we had our first very large enterprise deal. Enterprise sales and enterprise customer acquisition is always, you know, kind of tough and a lengthy process where you have to go and, you know, talk to a lot of customers. There's a lot of grilling that happens, a lot of evaluation that happens, and you don't have a proven track record by that. So somebody has to ultimately trust you and take a call. So when that whole long process ends, and when you start having large customer and large paychecks coming to you on a recurring basis, you really feel, you know, that you have achieved a good benefit to you. And I think a recurring customer base and having a first initial few large customer base is what brought the largest amount of satisfaction to our company, because that's when you know, kind of reach that point of product market fit. That's when you know that, you know, you are here for a long time. And survival is no longer a problem. Self-doubt is no longer a problem. Public doubt is no longer a problem. Then it's all about how repeatable you can make and how much you can scale that initial success to much longer journey. So, yeah.
Yes. Super. Well, Dhruv, thanks a lot for the sharing. Really good stories, really good lessons shared, really good, you know, also scars from the battles that you've kind of imparted with this. I'm grateful for that. And I want to wish you all the best in your upcoming fights and battles and wars and journey ahead and continue the growth at Loginex.
Thank you so much, Arul. Thanks for having me. It was a wonderful conversation.
My pleasure. Be in touch.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radopalamario.com/podcast for all the show notes, links and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.